Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The News in Review, a chance to look back at some of the developments in the cases that BNN has been following. We have a great program lined up, and I'm sure there are going to be a few sparks. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Simon. Hello, everyone.
Once again, she was unable to wriggle out of this week's program. From Gainesville, Florida, we have ace reporter and the director for news and programming for the Sky 97.3, TJ Hart. TJ, how are you today?
Doing well, just back in from the pool, so I'm relaxed and ready to roll.
So, what are your predictions for the Gators this season?
I think they're probably going to win more than they lose, and they'll surprise a few folks. Mission starts Saturday, so I'll be up in the press box covering them with a full new look at a brand new quarterback, so it'll be fun this year.
All right, and it's not you acting as quarterback?
Oh, I don't think they like senior citizens doing that, Simon.
from upstate New York, we have the crime doctor himself, Denny Griffin. Denny, good to talk to you again.
Simon, greetings and salutations from soggy upstate New York.
Denny, is there any truth in the rumor that the ex-mobsters in Vegas planning a welcome home street parade for you when you move back there?
As a matter of fact, I've heard that same rumor, but I'm not sure if it's true. But, you know, Simon, this week I got word, you're familiar with the Facebook game Mafia Wars?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, well, I guess they got millions of players, and they're having their first annual convention in Las Vegas in October, and my cohort Frank Collada and I have been contacted to be the featured speakers at the Mafia Wars convention. So I'm kind of excited about it.
The Mafia Wars, I see on Facebook. I know that some of Jan's friends play it.
Yeah, but I've never went to it.
Oh, they'll be excited when they hear the news that you're going to be part of it. I also believe that from the beautiful state of Maine, we have Peter Hyatt on the line. Peter, is that
you? Hey, good afternoon, everyone.
Hi, Pete.
Hi, Peter.
How's Peter this week?
Peter's a little worried about a pair of cement shoes that have Denny's name on them.
Oh, man, tough room.
I want him to be safe.
That makes two of us, Peter.
Actually, Peter, I've heard a rumor on the street that in boxing parlance, I understand the statement analysis, beat an attorney by a TKO.
Yeah, no one showed up, I guess, huh? I wasn't expecting a match with Mr. Hornsby, because one of the things that he had said in his response was that he was going to allow me 30 minutes to interview him, and then he was going to post the analysis of the methodology. And in fairness to him, when you look at the list of law enforcement and the FBI and the CIA and the Mossad and the IRS, all the scary organizations, and all the Fortune 500 companies that have all had training in statement analysis, he's kind of up against a tall bill there in terms of the methodology. So, no, it didn't come out, and I guess we'll have to wait for another day.
So we'll just say statement analysis 1, Hornsby 0.
I think that's fair to say.
Perfect. And from Orlando, Florida, we have journalist Dave Neckel with us. Dave, how's your week been?
Oh, it's been pretty good, Simon. Hello, everyone. It's been an active week down here, I guess, with the news.
Active is always a good way to view it.
That's never a bad thing.
We do have a guest on the line, and I just ask that she hang tough for about 2 minutes, and I will introduce her. As always, our phone lines are open. Our switchboard number is 646-378-1120, and also our chat room is open. I want to start with a couple of quick updates. The Eric Kreinsberger case is at a very, very crucial stage. The police have two suspects in custody. Eric, alas, has been confirmed dead.
Mm.
However, this is still very much an active investigation, and it's at a very, very important juncture. I did have some communication with the lead detective yesterday, and after giving it some consideration, BNN has decided to hold off on reporting any details. The police carry guns and sticks, and I'm not very big.
Well, we really don't want to interfere in the investigation at this stage, for sure.
Well, I was just making a joke.
I know you was, but I just wanted to make it clear.
No, we would never, ever do anything to compromise the case. So, unfortunately, we can't really say anything about it. In the Zachary Pittman case, there are some encouraging developments. A new detective has been assigned, and he does seem to have gained the trust, or at least the hope, of Zach's mother, Christy Ragus, and I do believe we have Christy on the line with us. Christy, is that you?
Yes, it is. Hi, guys. How y'all doing?
Hi, Christy.
Hey.
Would you like to give us an update? I know there's a number of things that you cannot talk about, but you did seem pretty happy with the new detective.
Well, I guess I'm just happy because I'm finally getting some kind of response, and I mean, it's not a happy occasion, but I feel confident. I haven't met him personally, you know, face to face, but the phone conversations that I've had with the captain and lieutenant and the new detective are very encouraging, and I was told by the lieutenant that the new detective, he's very motivated, and he said he's not going to stop until he finds Zachary. And so that made me feel real good.
That's
real good
news.
Yeah. And this is the first time, I think really first time, that I'm not supposed to really open my big mouth and not say anything. And I mean, that's from, you know, them and not me, just, you know, not disclosing where the search is and stuff is. But I'm very, very upbeat about it, you know, as much as I can be on the search.
Actually, I'll make a comment, and I'm sure that someone in St. Tammany Parish is listening. So here's a note to the PIO. A decent PIO knows what's going on. It should not take me 2 phone calls to actually elicit a call back. In fact, in the second phone call, I said, well, okay, if you're not going to call me, I'm going to press anyway. It took about 5 minutes before he was back on the phone. And then he gave me the runaround about, well, I didn't know that.
Well, I do have a meeting this Thursday with the new detective and the lieutenant, and it's to get on the same page on certain things and, you know, talk about the case, and so that's encouraging, too. So I'm not paranoid of meeting them. So that's
fun. That's good. And I do hope that, you know, this case can now move forward.
I think it will.
Christy, I do have a message for you. I've been requested to read something to you by one of our readers, Kathy. It's a poem that a friend of hers, Erin, wrote, especially for Zachary and you.
Okay.
So if you don't mind, I'd like to read it to you.
Yes, please.
Within the beauty of the cypress trees, mystery drifts on a Louisiana breeze. Zachary went missing. The truth must unfold. The camouflage secret that Pearl River holds. While a mother longs for her son to call, magnolia blossoms, then their petals fall. A child cries out for her daddy at night, the pelicans down, still too young for flight. Zachary went missing, must unfold, the truth must unfold, the camouflage secret that Pearl River holds. An iris has bloomed somewhere within sight, knowing the answers on that one November night. Zachary went missing. The truth must unfold, a camouflage secret that Pearl River holds.
That's pretty. And that's beautiful.
She wanted me to read it to you.
So, thank you very much. That means a lot to me. It really does.
Not only an intelligent poem, but I think that's a poem submitted because of the inspiration of the courage to take this outside of, not take the answer that law enforcement was just giving in the beginning, and to take this outside the mainstream and push for answers. So I think that probably more people are inspired than you may realize.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. I do want to say something because it's really bugging me. This past week I've had contact with a few friends of mine that I've met on BNN and other places on Facebook. And this one person has gone out of her way, and other people too, have written the local news stations about Zachary. And as far as I know, they all turned Zachary down until we have some breaking news and they want to hear about it. Well, this is my thought on this. I'm upset about it because they don't think Zach has, you know, he's not worth the time right now and to get him out there. So when they do find my son, and, you know, when it all breaks out, I promise you that I will not be talking to any media other than BNN. My family will not. The only information that the public will hear will be from BNN or the police, because I don't have anything to say to them. You know, if they couldn't cover my son when he was first missing, when it was very, very important, then why would I talk to them? That's the way I feel. Maybe I'm being wrong, but I just feel very upset about that. Very.
Oh, I understand.
And, you know, that they can't even run an article on him. I mean, I don't understand it. I mean, this is ridiculous with this small town. And this is the local news, which would be out of New Orleans. And the paper, you know, they ran it twice. And the news, one news station ran it for 6 seconds, and that was it. And that was back in October of 2009. That's been it. And this lady went out of her way and wrote these letters for me and explained to them what's going on in the case and what's going on in Pearl River. And they declined to run his run a segment on him or anything. So
that is so sad.
But I appreciate everything that y'all have done for us. So
I have to slightly go to the defense of the news media. TJ, you run a large news station out of Gainesville.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't report every case, can you?
No, you can't, but by golly, on the Amber Alert, you sure better, because
right.
That's why it's there. It comes across not nearly as high priority as a tornado or a hurricane warning, but it gets out there, and you're supposed to react to it. If you're a responsible broadcaster, which we are, you're supposed to hit a tone, and whatever your station manufactures is not one of the things that the state puts together, and you're to read that, and you're supposed to put that in your news class, your newscast, until you find out more information.
Yep.
But you watch, if they find Zach, these people are going to be all over Christy at their door, waiting on them to come out the door to get the story. That's exactly how they work. So, I mean, not all of them, but most of the big mainstream, like ABC, NBC, or whatever, they all like that. They're right on top of you as soon as something like that happens. But before that, they just don't care.
Okay. Yeah, they're very reactive and not necessarily proactive. If you're a good local community broadcaster, you're supposed to be proactive. And in this case, when you get an Amber Alert, it's both reactive and proactive at the same time.
Right.
Christy, is there anything else you can tell us, or are we going to need to cut you off?
Yeah, you're probably going to have to cut me off because I always stick my foot in my mouth. But nothing. Maybe this week we'll find something out, and maybe I'll be able to talk about it. But right now, no, I can't. I can't speak. I wish I could, but I can't. And I look forward to meeting
you.
No,
okay,
I don't.
I do hope that you will keep us in the loop as the story unfolds.
Of course. Always. I appreciate it.
Simon?
Yeah. Yes.
Simon? Before
yes.
Christy leaves, can I ask her something or mention something to her?
Certainly.
Christy.
Hey.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you, I share your optimism and hope, you know, about the change in detectives, and from what this gentleman has told you so far, it certainly sounds encouraging, and I hope it works out. And I like the commitment he made to you that he will not give up until Zach is found. And I just like to tell you that I do a crime show also, and we've just started something new. In fact, August 31st is going to be our first Top Cop Award, where we take police officers who have worked with families of victims and have done a good job and should be recognized for that. And we honor them and make them our Top Cop of the Month. So, this officer is, does what he says and is as committed as he seems to be, down the road, I'd like you to, if you would let me know about that, and we would certainly entertain perhaps maybe recognizing his efforts if he works with you and does the job a police officer should do. So I hope you keep that in mind.
Definitely. That's wonderful. That would be great, and I hope we do have a good ending on this. And, I don't want to get my hopes up on a lot of things, but I can't help but feel a little bit better about things,
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, one
yeah.
thing, just knowing that they're working with you finally instead of against you, and you doing, going, having to beg them for help, that must be a relief alone.
Yeah, it is, but I really did like the other detective. I mean, there's nothing against him. I don't know what the circumstances, why he's not on the case anymore. They didn't disclose that. But I did like him as a person. I mean, we got along. I don't know if things came from higher up. I don't know. But I would never talk bad about him. I just didn't get the phone calls back like I should have. And, I don't know what the reason is. But, I really hope everything works out. I do. I do.
We do, too.
And I know y'all do, and I appreciate it. I really do. But
Christy, we need to move on, but I do want to, say to you, have a great week. And please do keep us in the loop on this.
By all means.
I will. I definitely will, guys.
Or
y'all
if you need just
to talk,
if you need just to talk, where we are.
And if you go blabbing to Nancy Grace, right, we know where you live.
I do not watch CNN. I do not watch Nancy Grace. I'm not familiar with her too much, but I don't watch that. So you don't have to worry about that. No. You're the only people that I talk to, I promise. But thanks, guys, and y'all have a good afternoon, okay?
God bless
and you. Okay, have a good one.
All right, talk to y'all later. All right, thanks,
bye.
Guys. Bye-bye, guys.
I was just looking at the switchboard, and I noticed that we have another panelist joining us. I mean, no program would be complete without the infamous bail bondsman himself, William Cobra Storbs. Cobra, it's great to have you on the show.
Simon, it's always great to be part of your show. Jan, Denny, TJ, I've heard you guys so far, and I thank Peter Hyde. How y'all doing out there today?
Hi, Cobra.
Hey, Cobra.
Hey, Brother Mac.
Okay, Cobra, just sit tight. I know that you have lots to tell us. before we get on to the meat and potatoes of the of today's broadcast, there is a new case. Jen, you discovered this a couple of days ago. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch?
Well, it's about, I did run across an Amber Alert or missing persons alert about a 16-year-old girl, Leslie Ashlyn Fain, from Noonan, Georgia, that appears to have run away, and her mother, Lisa, is desperately trying to find her daughter. She was last seen on August 9th. She's pretty certain that her daughter left with a man, 22-year-old man, that she met online, of all places, and they think that they're together now in North Carolina and possibly traveling to other places as well. And she's listed with the Noonan Police Department as to be an endangered runaway right now. So, you know, that's kind of scary for this mother.
Okay, I know that we have lots of listeners in the Georgia and Carolina areas. Are there any pictures of this girl?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do have them on my article that I have posted on BNN. There was two or three, I think I've got three total on there for other, one with the Noonan Police Department. But there is a Facebook page for, and I don't have the link for it right now, but we will post it on our wrap-up for this show if anybody's interested in going and looking her up. And if anybody has seen her, you know, it would be really great if you call in and report it, because this girl could be in danger, and, she, you know, maybe she's not, but it's very likely that she could be. So,
didn't you also receive a hot tip?
Yes, I've got a message in that I guess I could read it to everyone if that's all right, Simon.
Mm-hmm.
It says, okay, I'm a friend of Leslie's. I was with her the day before she ran away. We went shopping around the Noonan area, and Oscar, which is the 22-year-old man, had followed us in his car. He followed us into the stores, and I know what this man looks like, and I have met him. He is not a nice guy, and I do not like him. Someone needs to find her ASAP. I also have a picture of her car. If someone could get a hold of those files and show me the photos of the guys, I will be able to tell you which one he is. And this I'm going to turn over. I'm going to report this in and see if it's, you know, any of any help at all to the girl. So, you know, to the mother, rather, to find the daughter.
Do you have any contact information for the Noonan police?
Oh, yes, I do. But,
I mean, again, we can put that
it's all in my article that I wrote, that we can post it on the wrap-up also.
I think the key thing here is that this case is really, really hot. You know, it's not months and months old. So, folks, you know, put your thinking hats on. Let's find this girl before something bad happens.
Yeah, also, I would also like to just as a reminder to everybody that, you know, this is something that can happen to anyone. And no one knows for sure if this man was giving Leslie his right name or his right address. You know, I mean, he could have given her all false information in case her friends found out about this. And, you know, he could be anybody. And everybody said, you know, they want to look this man up, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he is his name, even. I mean, anyone, I've fooled around with chat rooms and all that for over 10 years online, and I know that there's so many people that come on and say, well, okay, my name is John Doe, say, and it could be Jane whatever. I mean, it could be totally opposite from what they are. And I really urge the parents with their daughters or sons that get out on places like Facebook or MySpace or any of the other chat rooms and make sure they're supervised when they're doing it, especially the young girls. They are like targets to these men, predators, and they get on there and they lead these girls to make them think that they're really someone special, and that's how they get them. You know, they convince these girls that they're someone that would love them and all that, and the girl ends up meeting them somewhere and never gets seen again. So please, everybody that has teenage children, or not even teenagers, some of the young ones even, and just be careful, and don't let them just talk to anybody if at all possible.
TJ, you have daughters and granddaughters. God, you're getting old.
Every gray hair on my head is courtesy of those young ladies.
I mean, you and I have covered enough cases that, you know, yeah, we both get gray hairs. I mean, there's got to be something that parents can do. I mean, I love the internet. You and I live on the internet. But I mean, how do we protect our kids?
Well, it's got to start long before the child ever finds out what the internet is, and that's to build them up with their own self-worth and their own self-esteem without turning them into a precious little snowflake. Meaning that, you know, raise your child the way your child is desired to be, and they will never, ever, ever let you down. One thing that was very important with our girls, we grew up in a, you know, they grew up in a city setting, although it was a small city. They caught on fast that there were things going on, and they might have been living a sheltered life. I do remember that my youngest daughter was, I think, 11 at the time, but she was tall for her age. A young man came buzzing by our house in his brand new shiny car, and he was all of 16, and just as stupid as you know, any of us ever were when we were 16, and he wanted to show off that car, and he sees this cute gal out on the sidewalk, and I am watching out the front door, and she's looking at the car, and she's talking to him, and I say, you got a telephone call, and she comes running in. I said, what were you doing? And she says, well, that young boy was showing me his car. He wanted me to go for a ride in it. And I said, do you know that young boy? She goes, well, I've seen him before. I said, do you know what that young boy wanted to do once you got in that car? And she said, no, what? And I said, he was going to kiss you. And she goes, oh, ick! And she was pretty much cured of talking to anybody older than her in the form of a male for quite a while. And now she's married and happily married and has four daughters of her own, so she can start having gray hair from any similar thing. But the thing was, she was never going to get in that car. She was never, ever going to get in that car because, you know, she just knew.
At some point, she kissed someone.
Well, yeah, that's how she got the four girls, but I mean...
Okay, I think someone...
But the thing is that you have to build up self-esteem and let the girls you know that they can be loved by their own intrinsic values and not what somebody is filling their ears with in order to sneak a kiss from them, if you know what I mean.
Right. Peter, I know that you have some young children. What would your advice be? In fact, you know, what is your technique? You know, how do you teach young children that the internet's a great resource, but it's also a big cesspool?
Well, there are two ways, and the first way is exactly what TJ said. is that, especially with the young girls, is that they, boys and girls are different. Boys will say, look at me, Daddy, I'm hitting a home run. And the girls will say, look at me. And not so much what they accomplish, but it's who they are deeply, as they have a greater emotional capacity. And so, as TJ said, what we try to do is to show them to have their tank full. They get lots of attention from Dad, and they aren't the same needy young girls as they could be without that attention. And I think that predators, I know that predators can sense that. They can sense that disjointed child that they can prey upon who needs attention. But the other thing is, especially for young parents, is that we have a philosophy that when the child is two, the child lives in a totalitarian society where I am the boss of everything, and I don't give them choices about anything at all when they're two and three, and they don't fret, they just do. And so what happens is, as they get older, I start to take off the training wheels, and I will challenge them to, the 10-year-old, 11-year-old wants to go to the movies, and they'll have to argue with me and debate it about why they should be allowed to go to the movie, and they learn to think for themselves, and they say, well, here's the rating, here's what we know about it, here's the parent that's going, and they would prevail and they would have that freedom. But because they were taught to think that way, and they were taught to, the thinking is done in an obedient way, frankly, when my little ones were very little, I could have left a loaded gun on the table and not had fretted about it, because if I told them not to touch it, they wouldn't touch it. It wasn't an issue. And so as I taught in parenting classes for many years, this was practice. So if one of the fathers might see another dad and say, hey, you know, your daughter is kind of climbing on every man's lap there, maybe her tank's a little low, the dad would say, yeah, I'm a little busy at work, and I need to spend more time with her. And we'd get parents to invest themselves into the children. And that is absolutely the best defense against everything, not just the internet, but everything that could take them down, is to invest ourselves into them. Good parenting is exhausting, and whether it's just coming up with good stories to read at night, it, at times I run a little low on inspiration. It's hard work, but it obviously pays off.
Denny, I have to pose the same question to you, and I'm guessing that your answer is to make sure that 24 hours a day, your daughter is escorted by 8'6" Guido.
Yes, it's a scary world out there today, certainly, and educating the children about the dangers of. No, not all people are nice, and there are people out there who will take advantage of you to one degree or another, and some of them to the extreme. And it's a tough thing. Now I'm don't have any young children, but there's grandchildren, and I'm worried about it. It's a concern, and I know their parents appreciate the situation and the dangers and are cognizant of that, and which is a good thing. But there's a lot of people, and bad things can happen no matter how careful you are. I mean, there's always something can go wrong. But and there are other people out there that I've seen. I've heard the parents talking and so forth, and they don't seem to have a clue, and that really scares me. That in this day and age, people can be oblivious to the dangers, and I don't know how that happens. I don't know how they, you know, miss it. But some people take no precautions, don't try to teach their children to be cautious and be careful, and you know, it just seems to me that's a recipe for disaster.
Cobra, I'm going to ask you the same question. I know that you have children, that they are. Mostly grown up. In fact, I think your daughter's married, isn't she?
Well, I got five children. I've got two of them grown up, but they're never grown up. One is married, but I got some younger ones as well. But they're never grown up to bypass this until they probably get about 60, because I don't know. I've listened to you guys talking about I call them perverts or child molesters, child predators and everything else, and, you know, I hunt them. and I've been fortunate enough to catch 200 of those guys in my 8,000 arrest history. I'm going to tell you something. They have a twisted mind, and to be able to go into the mind of one of these guys, how they think, and then to be able to track them and everything else, it's a very scary world. And it's like Denny said, a lot of parents that they run into, and Peter the same way, they're oblivious to it. They have no idea, and that's who these guys track. And it could be an extra neighbor, not to scare everybody, but there's so many of them around us. That was one of the things I found out when I was in Putnam County. Putnam County has over 300 of them that they know of. But most offenders that end up on the sexual predator list that they've been caught are not caught until they've been doing this kind of business about 16 years. So that's the average span. If you look at it, there's a lot more that live around us than the ones that you can just find on the computer. So basically you have to teach your children, like Denny and TJ was saying, you got to try to love them, and, you know, the grass is not greener on the other side. There's a program out there. Most kids have cell phones, and I mentioned this to you before. It's called Web Safety. I forget what my website is for it. It's safetext.com or safetext.net or whatever, but just go to Web Safety. And basically it's a program that goes into their cell phone, and most kids are going to have their cell phone with them, and it's an easy way to keep track of them, to find out where they're at. And it also keeps track of the texting that goes on, the sex texting and everything. It's got like 7,500 words that it looks for to program out to let you know that, hey, somebody has just contacted your daughter. But, you know, we always think about daughters and tell our daughters, be careful. But let me tell you what, majority of them nowadays, it ain't the daughters, brother. It's the little boys. I mean, these guys took it to another level, you know. They took it to a whole new level. I mean, the perversion. And I've had them in the back of my Tahoe going to the jail. And you know what? Put them in jail. By the time I do the paperwork and I get home and I'm getting a cup of coffee, I'll be damned if they're not home already. I mean, the turnaround rate on them is extremely. And I've had to listen to them talking all kinds of crap. Cobra, I know you got kids. How old's your youngest daughter? Not the oldest one, the youngest one. I mean, just filthy, filthy stuff. And these are probably the worst of the worst, my brother. And they're out there. And like I said, TJ said it best. You know, you got to give your kids a lot of love and, you know, teach them at a young age that, you know, these people that are reaching out, contacting you are the wolf. You know, it's read them the Red Riding Hood stories. You know, that's the real deal right there. My God, what ugliness you have, bud.
Hey, Simon, can I add one thing there?
Sure.
When you talk about those that that he has caught, and I had a man once look me square in the eye and say, I don't know how, honest to God, my penis got in my daughter's mouth. And
oh, my God.
And I'll tell you what, if you want to talk about therapy, this is what I say to people. And Jan, I'll direct this to you as the female of the group here. I'm going to pass a law, and the law says that, Jan, you must be sexually attracted to 4-year-old girls. And Jan says, well, no, that's disgusting. And I say, no, that's the law, Jan. I say, you better start being attracted to them. And Jan says, no, I can't. That's disgusting. And then I say, okay, Jan, I'm going to put your name on the list, and everyone's going to know that you're not attracted to them. And she said, well, go ahead. I don't care. And then I say, Jan, I'm going to take away your job. You better start being attracted to them. And she's still not attracted. Then I say, I'm going to put you in jail, and you're going to lose your freedom, your house, your husband. You're going to lose everything, Jan. And Jan says, but I'm still not attracted to 4-year-old girls. As a matter of fact, there's nothing that I can say or do. There's no therapy. There's nothing I can do that would cause Jan to do that.
Right.
This is what it's like for those pedophiles who prey upon children. You're not going to be able to talk them out of it. Not you, not me, not any of us. And this is why I believe in the justice of the punishment should fit. And there are many states in the union where you will spend more time for a handful of pills or hurting an animal than you will for harming a child, irreparable harm. So it's a passionate issue for me, and especially with the sentences, what they are.
Okay, I do want to move on to the other cases, but just before I do, Jen, I want to ask you, you mentioned something earlier on that, you know, you had a chat channel for 10 years.
Yeah.
And there are lots of icky people out there.
Oh, yeah.
But what's your advice to parents?
You know, it's so hard because you can't watch your children day in and day out. And like somebody in the chat room just now had mentioned that, you know, nowadays they can get access to the Internet through their cell phones. And, I mean, if you're going to do that, they can have, you never know when they are going to be online with somebody. It's really hard, but the only way you can do it is to absolutely drill it through their heads that the danger in this, and make sure that they do, you know, understand not to give out their real names, not to give out what city they live in, or their address, or any personal information whatsoever. And that way these people can't get to them. I mean, but these children are being convinced by these people online that, you know, they're the safest people in the world. You know, this one's going to be bad to you, so you let me protect you. And then if they do get, they convince them, no matter what their parents put in their head. And that's the scary part. And so honestly, I don't really have another solution other than you have to teach your children what's right and what's wrong, and please, and just stay after them. Make sure you don't let nobody con you. And another thing would be, like, convince your daughter or your son, if they meet somebody online like that, have them trust you to be able to tell you about it, and then you can discuss it. And that way you'd be more aware of what's going on. But the child has to have trust in you to be able to feel comfortable enough to come to you to begin with and to tell you about somebody said I was beautiful, or somebody said that they liked my name, or something to that effect to start it out with them. But, I mean, as long as you show them that you love them, and like I said, you've got to gain that trust in all the time. My son, right now, he's going to be 20 next month, but he knows he can tell me anything. There is nothing that child can't tell me, whether it's right or wrong, and he knows he can come to me and talk to me, and I've raised him that way. And both of my sons I've raised that way, that no, I don't care what it is, they can come to me and tell me anything. But I think these young girls especially, and like you say, the little boys too, they have to be aware of this kind of situation and make them feel comfortable enough to where if something comes up, then they meet somebody, if they're talking to somebody that you don't know about, to let you know about it.
Actually, my theory is that if I was to have any more kids, and I don't want any more kids, but I wouldn't let them near a computer or a cell phone until they were at least 35 years old.
Bingo.
Okay. Let's move on to the Kaylee Anthony case. Brad Conway was the, I think, the top story this week. He's now out of the picture. Dave, what happened with Brad?
Well, you know, I think he figured it was the right opportunity to step down. I think that the timing was right. I think that motion might have pushed him over the edge. But I think, really it was a combination of all of the above that brought about his resignation. First, you know, coping with George and Cindy's odd independence with, where they have no internal voices of reason, no respect for any defense lawyers, and I think he got tired of, they're lying, whatever. He wasn't earning any money, and I think he had enough. So, I don't know what else there is to say about him except that he... I think he did the right thing. He just had enough of everything. But now they have no lawyer. Who wants to work for him? I think that's what's... He was such a soft-spoken guy. Smooth, calm, collected, and who are they going to get now? I don't think there's anybody that would come along that's not looking for a name that would take on that case. I don't think Brad was looking for a name for himself. He got it, but his actions kind of speak for himself. So I don't know. What does everyone else think?
Peter, I don't know how closely you've been following this case, but I have a personal theory that the buyer's defense motion wasn't so much the straw that broke the camel's back, but rather it was the escape mechanism. Yes, I can get out of this.
I agree with both of you and Dave. I don't think it was a straw. I think it was the open door that he'd been waiting for a long time. Mark DeJame, as we all know, was not able to do the one thing that I think he made good money off of doing, is get his clients to shut up.
Yeah.
And I think Dave gave a great description about that, the internal thinking of especially of Cindy. She's obviously the leader there. And Brad has wanted out for a long time. The last time Brad was interviewed, he was interviewed on one of the blog radio programs. I can't remember which it was, and I had gotten a hold of the transcripts there. And the indication in his language was that he was getting out whenever he could because he has just reached the limits of frustration. So I think that the reason that he gave was very weak. There's no legal argument that says he has to step down. There's no ethical argument that says he has to step down. And Mason and Baez obviously made fun of that, but he wanted out. He wanted out personally, and whoever touches George and Cindy is going to suffer humiliation, and their law firm is not going to receive the publicity that will help them. In my opinion, it may. Some people enjoy infamy. James apparently does not, and neither did Conway. So I'm glad for Conway. I'm sure that this had a major impact on his health. We saw Judge Strickland's his resignation letter showed the same thing. It was no more fun going to work anymore. It was no more enjoyment. It was just an endless circus. And I'll tell you what, I think that Baez does have a lot more to do with this than we might realize. Not this motion, but just the constant nonsense, the constant parading before the cameras. Conway constantly have to putting out fires because, who can handle Cindy? But having Cindy's like that fire or that gasoline, and Baez is always providing the match. So I think it was just a heck of a job, and it really probably took its toll on him personally.
Peter, do you think that there was some kind of a... I would say, I don't think a lot of people in the public believe that everybody involved in this case on the defense side, they're all in bed together. Now, I don't think that Conway was ever really all that close with Baez and Mason. And I know that Mason's got some people he's not very close with in the community, attorneys. But, I mean, do you think that it might have been also that he wanted to distance himself from that whole train wreck called Baez? You know what I mean?
I do. The reason I had said I had talked about him possibly resigning a month or so ago, but this is just how I see it. And I'm not an attorney, and I don't think about attorneys in truth, but I think the house of cards is going to fall upon Cindy Anthony, and she has put him in a place where he can't defend her. She is churning trouble. She is poking at prosecutors. I think she's going to be indicted. I think the justice is going to go after her. I've always thought it would be after the case, and now I'm beginning to wonder even if they'll be able to wait that long. So I think he has told her to stay out, stay out, stay out. She puts her foot in. She's going to get bit, and she's going to get bit hard, and I don't think that Conway wants any part of it.
Well, I think that she'll probably do too, but I wonder if it won't wait until after the trial, so they can use her as a... a witness.
Yeah, I always thought it would, but her behavior is so provocative that I wonder if she will actually cause a prosecutor to misstep there, to make a wrong move, a premature attack, because she is just outrageous. The mail fraud thing, it's caused so much controversy. Just the short analysis I did of her her letter to Casey, she doesn't mind ridiculing public figures. She flaunts herself at the law like it's nothing. I tell you what, there's a little bit of a personality, not a little bit, but there's a strong resemblance in a little area here between Cindy Anthony and Roger Clemens in terms of being
arrogant,
so bold, and yeah, the arrogance of a liar. He wasn't even under indictment. He went in there. Cindy has gone to places where she didn't have to say anything. It wasn't going to hurt or help the case. She can't help herself. She can't stop herself. I mean, Casey Casey got away, and she was empowered the last 2 years of her life living with George and Cindy because every lie was bought. Every lie was bought into. So when the police come to her, she gets in the cop car, and she says, yeah, you drive me down, and I'll show you the apartment where Annie lives. Oh, no one's there? Okay, you drive me to my office. I'll show you my office. I'll show you my desk. I'll show you my pens. I'll show you everything. And she gets in the car. That type of arrogance, or Roger Clemens initially, hey, someone who supplied these steroids, come forward. What happens? Someone comes forward. The arrogance of a liar means that they must hold the world in contempt and think they're smarter than everyone else. And these people are rare. The type of lies they tell are rare in the population, but it is overwhelming. And
Blagojevich got away with it
so far. But I think we're going to see Cindy Anthony serve time.
Maybe down the road.
Yeah, after the case is over, I think we may see her serve time of some form or another. I don't think she's going to die a wealthy woman like she thinks on the blood of that child.
I know Jan wants to chime in.
I just want to ask a question. If these people, the Anthonys, George and Cindy, are as innocent as they always claim they are, that they've done nothing wrong, what do they need an attorney for to begin with?
Well,
you're right.
Well, wait a minute now, because an easy answer to that would be, what did Roy Kroc do wrong? But he needed an attorney, and it became evident that he needed an attorney, because
well,
you never know what's going
to
come
Baez
up.
He had Baez on the other side, though. He had Baez to have to fend off the Anthony.
But what I'm saying is that's a broad question. That could pertain to both sides. You know, you can't just say one side you can ask that question. You know,
how many grandparents do you know of murdered grandchildren go out and get defense attorneys?
Right.
Well, yeah, you know, you're right, but the thing is, I think you need an attorney to advise you. I mean, because if you don't have an attorney, you're going to have all the networks coming down, and you're going to now obviously that this is one of the reasons why the attorneys don't stay with the Anthonys. You're going to have these attorneys who sit there and say, "Look, don't open your mouth, don't answer, you know, keep quiet." When the networks come down, you know, to ask all these questions. Well, Cindy in particular opens her mouth anyway. That's why they have trouble with keeping an attorney. But you need to have an attorney, I think, because even if George and Cindy were up, you know, like upfront, honest, you know, regular kind of people that were devastated by their daughter's, you know, action, either way, whether she killed the child or not, you know, you still need to have somebody there to take care of your affairs. For one thing,
people don't have affairs. They don't need someone to take care of anything because they haven't done anything. They don't need anyone to advise them how to mourn. They may need a counselor. They may need a clergyman. They may need close friends. But about the last thing that these victims need, and this is where you won't see Mark Klaus going out and saying, yeah, you better go get an attorney.
I bet he did have an attorney.
But you don't need to. What's that?
I'll bet he did. I'll bet you.
No, he did. He did not. As a matter of fact, he took a polygraph immediately. He needed nothing. He needed nothing except to search for justice. These people did.
Oh, I agree with you there, for sure.
That.
I'm not trying to defend him. Don't get me wrong. I just think that when people are in a position where they're not really in complete control of their faculties under a situation like that originally. You know, when you have the news organizations beating a path at your door, you know, and who do you go
simply,
with? What do you do?
You answer questions honestly. You answer questions honestly, and the media is going to go away. There's no story here.
Well, a good attorney might sit there and say the exact opposite. Say, don't answer any questions. You know, stay out of the limelight.
There might be a need to be a need for a good attorney, and what I'm saying is that people that are victims of crime don't go out and hire attorneys. It's just not done. It's not that's like a bill of sale. You sound like a shill for attorneys. You've got to help them make money on these sort of things.
No, but I don't know. I mean, who came to who? I mean, was it Najim coming to the, you know, going to the Anthonys soliciting, or was it the other way around? I mean, I don't think that the Anthonys said, oh, let's get Mark Najim.
No, I'll guarantee it wasn't the Anthonys that went out after Najim. Okay, Denny.
Yes, I'd like to ask a question. An interesting topic. My thought is I tend to go along, and I don't want to start an argument here, but I tend to go along with the idea that if you've done nothing wrong, you just tell the truth and there's nothing to worry about. However, there are different types of lawyers. There are And for example, there are lawyers that are civil only. They handle civil stuff, such as estates and financial type advice. There are entertainment attorneys who would guide you through negotiating a contract for a book, for example, or that type of thing. And there are, of course, criminal defense attorneys. The Anthony's attorneys that they've had, are they, is Najam and were Conway entertainment attorneys or financial advisor types, or were they criminal defense lawyers? I'm just wondering if you're not potentially a criminal defendant, why would you go to a criminal defense lawyer as opposed to an advisor, an entertainment attorney, or that type of thing?
But that is a very, very good point. I want to come back to that, but I've had a caller on hold for I don't know how long. Area code 724. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Oh, hi, this is Peggy from Pennsylvania. I guess I have a question. I'm curious about Cindy and then her, the way that Casey is. Is it that Cindy has no filter between what she wants and what she says? And the other part of that is that something that happens very early in childhood, or because it's ignored by the caregiver, you know, when they lie or when they, you know, are deceptive about what they want and they get away with it, and that just grows with the child?
I've got to admit, I'm not entirely sure I understand the question.
Well, it's just like Cindy has no filter between what she wants and how she goes about getting it. She just knows that she wants it, and so she'll say or do, and actually lives in that fantasy land that, you know, she can just have it. And it seems that Casey's the same way with, you know, I want this. And so that's what I'm going to go after, and I don't care, and I'll say or do whatever I have to get around the corner. So
yeah, they don't like to.
I just wondered if that's something that happens. Pardon me?
They don't want to take no for an answer, and they demand to get their way.
Actually, Peter, I think this is a subject that you've talked about before, like mother, like daughter.
It's incredible. Similarity between the two, where they have an expectation and an entitlement. I think that's what the caller might be referring to, is the entitled personality that thinks they are owed this, they want it, and they're going to take it. And the more that they are successful in that, the more entitled and more emboldened they become. So I think that's what we're looking at with Cindy and Casey. One of Cindy's letters that I haven't finished the analysis yet is remarkable in that she is describing herself and Casey as the only two people basically that can understand each other in this world. And I think she's right. I think that they understand each other. I think that de facto they're both murderers. Casey murdered Kaylee. Cindy is willing to murder Roy Kronk, which is why he needed an attorney. She's willing to murder Jesse Grund. She's willing to murder anybody that can take the place of her daughter. So I think that they're the same. But they both fabricate reality with impunity. And they expect it to be believed, and they are angry when it's not believed, and you better get out of their way. And that's, with Cindy, there was also an element of violence that made it even worse. So, is that what you're referring to?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that was exactly the area I was looking
at. Well, where do you think Cindy got that flaw? You know, you're right, Peter. But I mean, you know, where did it start? You know, is Cindy's mother or father? You know, I mean, we never hear anything bad about them. But where would Cindy get this kind of an attitude that she passed on to her daughter? Obviously, you know, is this a family trait? You know,
I don't know where it came from because I don't know her parents, but I do know this. It's no coincidence that she took a man that she could run shot over him. He is a pliable, submissive, spineless type of guy, and so she is able to impose her will. And even some of the stuff that we read about Cindy holding hands with the private investigator while George sat by idly like a cuckolded type of waste of a man there. It's pretty sad and pathetic stuff. And George does seem to arouse pity in the public for being under her thumb. But that type of domineering personality will find someone to control and dominate. And I think that George probably lived in fear of her. Still does.
Well, let me ask you this. Casey, you know, with impunity, she lied to the police right off the bat, you know, to the point where she took him to Universal Studios and then finally coughed up the truth. But, you know, I think she's lived a life where whatever she said, she'd make up stories, and everybody let her get away with it.
Wow.
Her friends probably sat there and said, oh, yeah, yeah, right, you know, and just let it slide. But her parents, I guess, were ultimately to blame when she was young growing up and where she learned how to lie and manipulate and get away with it. So, I mean,
she said she was sorry to Amy Hilwisinger for taking her money.
Yeah, right.
Paid it back yet? Still hasn't paid it back yet. Now, collection agency is going after it.
Yeah, well, she doesn't have any money in jail anyway, but
they enable.
But you know what? Oh, yeah, right. You're right. But where did this, you know, I think she learned it from her mother, obviously. Because nobody ever stopped her from lying.
If you look at Casey's worst traits, you'll see them in either George or Cindy. She learned how to lie from probably both, but especially with Cindy's elevation of fabrication reality. She learned to steal from George. George was a man who worked hard at not working hard. He would game the system for disability. He would game the system for this or that. They're both violent. Cindy choked him. George threw his own dad through a pay glass window. George with the Nigerian princess, George with the online gambling. All the traits that we see within Casey Anthony are so dominant and displayed, and I kind of wonder if we're living in an age where all this information is available to us like never before. There was a psychological profile done of Adolf Hitler in 42 or 43 that predicted his suicide. And I think how well done that was, yet they had so little information compared to what we have about just this one family alone. I mean, we know more about them than probably any other strangers in our lives. It's amazing.
Okay, right.
Caller, one last comment. We need to move on.
Oh, okay. I just going to say I found, or it's been a while to offline now with Casey's friends, and they all said Casey was a liar, and one of them even commented about Cindy, how Cindy would do anything to make Casey look good. So, okay, well, thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thanks for calling in.
Yep, thank you. Okay, well, let's move on to the Haley Cummings case. TJ, you have been sat very patiently for a very long time. Tell us, I don't even know where to start on this week's activities. Do you want to give us the thumbnail sketch and then we can pick it apart?
Yeah, what we had was a lot of courtroom activity and also some extracurricular activity outside the courtroom. It started off with, Tommy going with no contest a week or so ago, and then his attorney saying, we think that Joe Overstreet might have killed Haley, something about a machine gun. Monday, we have Misty pleading no contest, hopefully going in as a youthful offender for her sentencing. If they're able to condense the charges from both Putnam and St. John's County, thus reducing her time in prison from a possible 210 years in jail to just maybe about 10, if she's lucky. And then her lawyer saying Misty hid under the blanket as Haley was put into a black bag. In both cases, you have people talking about a machine gun of sorts in being involved in a dispute with Ronald and Joe Overstreet. And one of the attorneys, I believe it may have been Field, Misty's attorney, saying Joe Overstreet took Haley as a substitute for the gun. Werner, whose client is Tommy Croslin, said that you know, Tommy did as he was ordered for fear he might get killed and this, that, and the other, and that Haley was put in a bag and dumped into the river. It didn't say which river, and it doesn't, for this situation, even mean that it was the St. John's River. Could have been Dunn's Creek, could have been a few other bodies. There's tons of bodies of water around that area. I mean, the whole place is, it should be called Swamp Suma. But you have all of that going on with a bit of the drama of Crystal and her mom and other family members attending the sentence, hearings, rather, with Misty and Ronald. And you would expect them to be there, but they were there. And you've got that going on. But the thing that keeps coming up is Joe Overstreet, one, who's never been charged with a crime, claims he's innocent. His lawyer says there's no reason to think that he's a suspect in this crime. Supposedly had a fallout with Ron over a gun. Initially, the first reports we heard within days of Haley missing was it was a handgun. That's what we were led to believe, that it was a handgun found in a culvert. Later on, and you know, the story just pretty much went away. Then it goes to a deer rifle. Then it goes to a machine gun. Makes you wonder who's manufacturing these stories, or if the basis of the story is true, but they're just getting enhanced with time. So the public, the Putnam County Sheriff's Office is not responding to any questions or allegations surrounding what these attorneys have said. And I got to tell you what, it has lit up our phone lines here at Sky Radio. It has lit up our website and yours as well. I even went back to talk to my fellow Floridian, William Cobra Stobbs, who was in on this very early going on. And Bill, I'm going to throw it to you. What's the deal about the gun and what's going on here?
Uh-oh.
Good going.
I'm there. Where to I'm begin, huh?
Well, I guess... I'm sorry.
Cobra.
Is Cobra on the line? I thought he was.
Yeah, I'm on the line.
Oh, okay. What's the deal with the gun? You and I talked about this the other day. We're both scratching our heads.
All right. Well, no, I'm not scratching my head, okay? Here's the dealio. When Joel came to town about the first, second day in town, showed up at the trailer, he's ace coon booning with Misty while Ron's working, and Tommy's the chauffeur, and they're all chilling. Well, he steals the gun, all right? Either he takes it, Misty takes it, or Tommy takes it. They're all three in it together.
What kind of gun is it?
This is a pistol. This is, my understanding, a 9mm. It's definitely a pistol, and I believe it's a 9mm pistol. Okay? So he gets his possession of the gun. They actually start threatening Joe Overstreet to bring this freaking gun back. And Misty didn't want to give up the gun. He's going to get whooped. So these stories right now that Joe Overstreet was scaring the hell out of everybody, man, they scared the hell out of Joe Overstreet. So Ronald says to me he has a good feeling he knows where the gun is. And he goes on this hunch that the gun is in a ditch, in a covert, covered by a board. So he goes to Hank Senior's house outside the ditch, a covert, and he looks in there and looks back in the covert, and sure enough, covered up by a board is this 9mm pistol. So it's been recovered. Now, Joe Overstreet had already got it, and, you know, of course, Misty's in it. They were trying to sell the thing for dope or whatever, but I believe the actual culprit that took it was Tommy, because Tommy stole a pistol from the blind man, you know, about a month or so later and got arrested for it, or 2 months later. But the ironic thing was, when Ronald found his gun, he wiped it down. I think he said, quote, unquote, he washed it, wiped it down, and gave it to Putnam County Sheriff's Office. He also told me that he took the rest of his guns, cleaned them, you know, sprayed them down, and went and gave them all to Putnam County Sheriff's Office. So Putnam County Sheriff's Office supposedly got all the guns. Now, I know he went out and bought a Glock 40, I think it was, because he's proud of shining that little laser light all over the place. So he had that pistol in his possession somewhere. But Joe Overstreet and the story about he came and got Haley because of the gun issue, bullshit. I think that Joe Overstreet is the fall guy. Now, we got two people already confessing to either accessory to murder or accessory to kidnapping or accessory to something, and that's Misty and Tommy. And I say cut the herd out and give Misty a freaking 100% walk deal on the dope, on the kid, everything else, based on a conviction of the other people that were players. Because my theory is she's young enough, and unless she's going to walk a straight line, which I doubt, karma's going to come right back around and bite her in the ass, and in the end, Putnam County will get what they want anyway, and that's for her ass to go riding. But that's the only way they're going to get the story straightened out. This thing over a gun, I have my theories about it, and I've shared them with you. I think that Misty and Tommy had a little hooch-cooch going on. I think they had some secret situation going on. Either that, or I happen to agree with a couple of other folks that there was not 98 phone calls that I'm hearing over the weekend. I defy anybody to show that there was 98 phone calls made. Hell, you could have drove on those phone calls down there to find out what the hell was going on. But I do believe that there may have been an altercation, and Haley may have ended up getting killed prior to Ronald going to work, and he went ahead and went to work for the alibi, left this thing, Misty, it's your problem. That was your dope she ate, or that was your deal. And Tommy was summoned to help clean up the mess. I don't buy any of the stuff, but now they've admitted to using the band. They've admitted to a black bag. I go with TJ, and we talked about this. I think the river was a throw-off because he took me to Lake. The only river he took me to was Dunn's Creek. We spent 4 days out in the swamps trying to figure out what part of Snoke's Landing was the child in. It wasn't the Mondex. It was one of the other ponds there. But I didn't have the ability, and I asked for search dogs. I asked for boats. TJ will tell you. I called EquiSearch. And EquiSearch would have sent some folks down there, but we couldn't get permission from the sheriff's office to bring them in, and that's what they required in order to bring them in. But I think that he was throwing everybody a loop-de-loop by taking them to St. John's River versus taking them back out by the pond by the Mondex. But if you ask me about it, I mean, I was deep off in it with him for four frickin' days. So when he tells the news media or his grandmammy that he helped tie a rope around this child, tie a cinder block to the other end, and then, of course, his attorney, Weir, the other night says, oh, no, he had his hand in his face. He was scared to death at Joe Overstreet. Joe Overstreet's a little bitty feller. He ain't got no gun, remember? He was trying to find one, remember? And he could whoop him in a minute. So all this bullshit going back and forth, you know, that, everybody's shaking their head. I know. I've been with every one of them except Joe Overstreet. Everybody, including Ronald, tried to put it on Joe Overstreet. Everybody did. They started that right from Jump Street. I don't know. Joe Overstreet's pretty, from what I see, his record and everything, he's a pretty wild little feller. I don't know that he would have the potential to do that, but I think it was too damn convenient. They look around, kinfolk attack their own kinfolk first off. He left town. Shit, blame him. He probably took Haley and went to Tennessee. Go look at him, knowing full well what really happened. You got a black plastic bag. They got all this crap going on. And Peter will tell you, the bag's important. The blanket's important. The gun has some importance to it, but based on those stories haven't changed yet. But it's double funny.
Whoa. The story has changed. The story changed from the item.
I'm sorry. The items haven't changed. But here's another
The words have been consistent.
She ran, right, and Peter and I have been connecting word dots back and forth, but here's the dealio. She ran back into the bedroom, allegedly a made bed, that she was supposed to be under these covers crying and raising all kinds of hell, freaking hell out, and she heard no noise. She went back in there to get her phone because it was on the bed. That's what she told the investigators and everything. Her phone was on the bed. Well, while she's laying in bed with the covers overhead, how come she didn't hit 911 on that damn phone and bring them? How come she didn't do that? And how come she went to all this trouble to come up with this concluded story? Because the threat has left now. The threat's gone. So why don't she just tell the truth then instead of saying, I woke up and my daughter. So she's right dead in the middle of it. She's put herself there. Sorry. Tommy now, for an alibi or for whatever reason, he's got himself in the middle of it. I say there's a third party in this. I say give one of them, probably her, the deal, because you can't trust the rest of them. Give her the freaking deal and let them come clean all of a sudden and based on a conviction only. At least that way you get another story where they're trying to throw everybody under the frickin' bus and see if it pans out. And if you get a conviction on it, fine, cut her loose.
Okay. There are many, many different facets to what we've been talking about. I just want to focus on the gun, right?
All right. I don't believe any of that bullshit about no gun. Let you know that straight off. He already got his ass in trouble by trying to steal a gun. He was terrified of Ronald, that Ronald was going to kill him unless he found that gun. So one of these three members narked out where that gun was. Ronald, in his infinite wisdom, could not have found that gun in that cupboard, in that ditch, covered by a board, in front of Hank's house. And just, it didn't happen.
Okay.
So one of them.
All right. you're jumping the you're jumping
the gun.
Yeah, right.
The gun.
Right. Okay, I've heard three different stories. It's a pistol, it's a rifle, and more recently, it's
machine gun. Yeah, right. Well, first of all, you know, I did a check. I checked. Ronald does not have, and you know, if he had an illegal machine gun, I mean, that's ATF's problem there all along. You know, that's ATF's jurisdiction on that. He didn't have no machine gun. He may have had a high magazine type of rifle that they're calling a machine gun. But as far as a machine gun, definized by a sear, a selector switch, that type of stuff, I doubt it. But the first incident was over a pistol that she allegedly kept under her pillow. That was what he stole day one or day two when he came to town. This particular night, they're trying to claim now, they're taking that old story, trying to put him as a fall guy. He was here looking for a gun. He was trying to get a rifle. He was trying to take his machine gun, which was in the closet, supposedly. But none of that makes any sense if you walk the story backwards. So I think what they did is they're trying to use the same items, like the black bag, the blanket, and the gun, and change them all around so that they have a alibi to throw it all on Joe Overstreet. Joe Overstreet did it, which I don't believe that for a damn minute.
Okay, TJ, what's your theory on the guns?
On the guns, I think there's some truth to it. I just don't think that it's the whole truth and nothing but the truth. I think there it was part of one story, and I think it perhaps might be leading into another. I don't think these folks are capable of telling the truth. So every time I hear something come out of their mouths, I just kind of wonder, you know, what are you lying about now? And if you're truthing, which part of this lie is the truth? That's about all I can take out of it.
Let me also add something. Let me add something to that, TJ. This guy went there, supposedly, we buy the story, looking for a gun. Okay? So mainstream, here's a guy, common thief, same as any other thief, he comes to steal your water hose. So he can't get your water hose, so he's going to rape and murder your child over a freaking coming there for a gun. I mean, this guy's, you know, it takes a lot to swallow that story. Typically, when somebody comes for something, they come in for something, and if not, they come to get something else. They're not going to kill somebody, rape some child. That's what the allegations are now, that apparently he was choking her to death. He was doing this and this and this, and then all of a sudden, bam, he takes the kid and stuff. No, I don't buy that. Do you buy that, Peter?
Not at all. Matter of fact, I heard it was a Daisy Red Ryder BB gun.
It could have been.
He's
going to
shoot his eye out there.
Probably a sharp stick, probably what it was.
What bothers me most about this is, and first of all, if it's a lie, TJ has hit on where the lie came from. There was probably an issue at one time in the past with a gun, and this is why they used that in their story. But this is what bothers me, and Simon, I've shared this with you. It's one thing for an attorney and a journalist to say, this is what I've been told. It's an entirely different issue for a journalist and an attorney to attempt to affirm these things to be true. And that's what caused my anger on Friday night when I was watching this on television, is that the attorney and Art Harris both, in presenting what we were told by the client, they were attempting to affirm it as a matching story. The attorney went as far as to say that the discrepancies over the past year and a half between Misty and Tommy are due because he was high on Xanax. And then Harris responded by saying, well, actually, the timeline does work out from what Misty heard, because Misty would be familiar with that van. And both of those things are nonsense. They have no right to be doing that, first of all. Second of all, the story they're floating, not only has no credibility, but as Cobra pointed out, the language and the words they've been dropping, that has been consistent since the 911 call. So I think they're, even though they're lying, I think they're stitching together a story of what happened to that poor little girl.
I'm going to interject with a little bit of humor. Clearly you watched the HLN Jane Velez Mitchell show. Not very well-dressed Levi Page. You noticed everyone else on the panel was wearing a jacket and tie. Came out with some comment, you know, Werther said blah. and James Werther jumped right in and explained that his name was Jim or Mr. Werther. I thought that was most humorous. And, you know, unfortunately, the HLN cameras shifted away from Levi at that moment, but I'd love to see the outtakes. I'll bet there was a red shift.
Guarantee it.
Well, how are they communicating? I mean, they can't, you know, Tommy and Misty, or how are they talking to each other? Solidifying this story.
If they were talking to each other, the story would probably catch a little bit.
Before he went to work, my brother. It was already done. I think, you know how hillbillies talk. You know, some hillbillies will talk like this. If it was four or five, they'll say five or four. And I think somebody said nine or eight times he called. And then in nine or eight, 98 times. Yes, by God. And even Picasso even hit him with that one, says, I don't think it was no 98 times. I don't believe it was 98 times. Because let me tell you, if I'm doing an investigation, you called somebody 98 times, oh, you did it. You did something.
Okay.
Isn't it possible that somebody could have sent a repeating text message, you know, just to, in some of those cases to really juice up the numbers?
No. No, I believe there was a number, but, you know, the phone was off. And, you know, then they said they'd sent Tommy down there. I think Tommy was already there at 6 o'clock, like he said earlier, that he was down there smoking a J. And then down there at 10, banging on the door, and nobody comes in. So now Tommy has tied his feet to that rope. He may as well phone himself in the swamp. But what amazes me is they're probably waiting on another shoe to drop, because already he's put himself in as accessory to a murder of this child. Crazy ass.
Well, how did this? I mean, I've got a little issue with his lawyer, Mr. Werther, by saying such things in public. And how would that? You know, wouldn't that just basically have that boy walking the plank as an accessory to murder?
Exactly right. He implicated him and he placed him at the crime scene. He's got him using drugs. He's got him hung out, TJ.
Listen, let me tell you what. You watch some of the things that these attorneys have done. Even with, I like Fields. Fields is a great guy. But he threw his client right out there for what reason, I don't know. Maybe trying to get the 6-year youthful offender, I don't know. But for an attorney to go ahead and throw stories out there and go on TV, had my attorney went on TV and tried to pull that crap, I want to tell you what, I hope they got insurance, because Florida Bar Association be getting a phone call. Bunch of attorneys raising hell. What they did to Tommy the other night on the TV, you know, I know Tommy's in it to his sock tops, but the thing of it is, your attorney is, you know, I think somewhere in the Bible refers to them as a hired liar. He's supposed to be your liar. He's supposed to, you know, protect you. But tell me where the protection was for Tommy the other night. I thought that was just crazy, crazy, crazy.
Oh, I agree. He hung him out to dry.
Okay, I want to wind this back to Misty for a moment. TJ. As I understand it, she appeared in Putnam on Monday and pled nolo to seven charges. It was six?
To several, and then she only had one in St. John's the next day.
Right, and she appeared on Tuesday and also pled a nolo.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and... I know that you and I had talked about this and the fact that she only had one opportunity to play the magic youthful offender trump card.
Uh-huh.
However, the two cases have now been combined.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the pre-sentencing hearing is set for October the 8th or the 9th, somewhere around there. So
right now they've got an investigation going on with this leading up to the October 1st sentencing, yes.
Right. So effectively, she's going to be able to play this youthful offender trump card, and... She can play it, I won't say twice, but because they've all been combined together.
Yeah. There's a possibility. You know, you've just seen a woman with the biggest leverage, a judge ever had, right or wrong. I think the drug sentencing in Florida here is pretty stupid when they can let pedophiles and murderers walk for half the time the person hauling pills has got. But that's another story for another time. The possibility of well over 200 years in jail reduced down to 10 with a youthful offender. The bargaining chip is pretty much gone away if that's going to be the case. But it looks like in all probability it will be.
Yeah, I'm horrified at this. Okay, let's talk about Ron. He's pled to 3 of the 5, charges.
Uh-huh.
As I understand it, one carries a minimum of 3 years. The other two carry minimums of 10 years. Now,
I thought it was 15.
No, I could be wrong,
okay.
But
I don't know. I don't have my notes in front of me. I'm sorry, Simon.
Now, there's two ways of looking at this, all right?
Uh-huh.
One is, 23 years behind bars. The other is they can combine them all and maybe 10 years, particularly if he is going to be testifying for the prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any take on what the real meal deal is here?
Apparently, he's given them some information, or this deal would have never been cut. I'm thinking that he has just an outsider looking in with no empirical evidence. This deal would never have been cut had he not, put something forth in good faith, or has already given them something with which to work on. And I tell you what, I know how people are reacting around here, that he's trading prison time on the blood of his child, perhaps. And, that's the most cynical. Other folks are questioning, why would you wait now until your skin is being hung out to dry, come forward in the resolution of your own missing daughter's case.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people pretty animated about that here in this area.
Okay, I want to go back to the Cousin Joe thing because it just out and out annoys me. as I recall, and I'm going to ask my resident expert, the repository of all knowledge and wisdom in this household,
God.
Jan. Now, this Cousin Joe started with Grammy Flo on HLN, but it wasn't Tommy that said Joe did it. It was Grammy. It was the toothless Grammy.
She put the words in his mouth. He did not say Joe Overstreet first. She did, and he just agreed with her.
I think we have those tapes on both of our websites.
Yeah, I believe so.
We do.
Well, whether you got tapes or not, but that Jan just told it straight. That's why I've been having a problem with Joe Overstreet the whole damn time. How Granny threw it out there, and they all jumped
exactly
on the bandwagon.
Right. That's exactly right. And they always say that how could they have their story the same one? It's because the words was put in his mouth.
There you go. Well, Granny said, throw me in jail for a week. I'll get the juice out of her.
I said,
Granny, be careful what you ask for.
You might have to chew that food.
Yeah. What you going to do? Give him the gummy torture?
No, she wanted to be put in the same cell with Misty. And so she'd get it out of Misty. I said, oh, Granny, be careful what you ask for.
Denny, you've been very quiet. And it's always bad when you're quiet because it means you're thinking.
Yes.
Right. What is it you're thinking?
As we rehash some of the stuff and the guys are talking about some of the initial stories and so on that were out here, and it really is, you know, when I think back on all the stuff that's transpired and the various stories and the players and who said what and how stories have changed over the weeks and months, and I'm just trying to think. I've done a lot of research on various crimes. I followed a lot of different cases over the years. I'm trying to think if I've ever seen one that's this bizarre. I don't think I have. I mean, it's just some incredible stuff that's happened, and it's a lot of it's mind-boggling. And a fiction writer probably would be laughed out of town if they did a fiction. They'd say, "Oh, what an imagination you got! None of this stuff could ever happen." But
you got one of those on the case, Denny.
That's right. That's right. But it's just an incredible thing. And it's if it weren't so tragic as far as the missing child goes, it could be comical.
There you go.
There was something else that happened this week that I'm not a particularly delicate child, shall we say. I don't buy into nonsense easily. But Lisa Crosland managed to get out of jail and through an intermediary or two, because Jen was definitely a key partner in this. We did get an interview out of Lisa. I don't know if any of you read it. I mean, it's not in depth. It's a fairly short interview, but my heart actually does go out for her. Peter, did you have an opportunity to read it at all? Uh-oh.
Oh. Peter.
Oh, no. He's off analyzing something.
Holy shit.
TJ, did you did you read it?
Yes, I did. That sounded just like the way she speaks. Right now, I think her heart's filled with hope, but her head's filled with garbage. And what I mean by that is that addiction is a very cruel thing. Your heart can be with being the best person you could ever want to be, but your mind is going to try to screw your heart over every chance it gets when that dirty darkness of addiction is in there. And remains to be seen if she's going to be able to keep on the straight and narrow. I know that she has a lot of people looking out for her, or at least some. And where she is right now, that's their job, is to look out for her. But, I wish her the best. She never did say who let her out. She never did say why, her deal is what it is. There's a lot of questions there, but I understand also in a situation when you're talking to someone that tender and that fragile, maybe that's not the question to ask right off the bat, too.
Right.
As I understand it, and I could be completely wrong, the cocaine charges were dropped, which just left the other...
Probation violation, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She is in an unfortunate position. She can't visit Hank because she doesn't have picture ID.
Yeah.
She can't visit Tommy or Misty because she can't leave the county until she pays her fines. This was a question that someone else asked earlier in the program about Tommy and Misty trading letters. No, they can't. And I'm being told that the reason, and this one will have everyone on the floor rolling in laughter, but it's so stupid, it has to be true. Misty has to produce a copy of her birth certificate to prove who she is before she can receive mail from a fellow inmate. Now, I'm not sure if they think they might have the wrong Misty Croslin in jail, but I suspect that the cops do tend to check out, you know, who people are before they stick them in the slammer.
Oh, yeah. You want to make sure you get the right person.
Right. But, I mean, you know, I couldn't make that up if I wanted to.
Well,
and that is what I'm being told.
That's what I hear. But the thing that she can't leave the county and she's got this probation thing, I think that she can get a pass from her probation to go visit. She can't relocate or leave the county, move, but that's a hardship. And if they're that cold-hearted that they can't even see their own kinfolk, you know, then it just goes to show you that something ain't right. Something just ain't right. I mean, golly.
Well, I will tell you that here in Florida, you have to show your birth certificate to get your license, your driver's license renewed. So that's kind of a popular thing these days.
More than that, PJ, I went and got mine. You got to have a drop of blood, your passport, birth certificate, social security card, proof that you live somewhere. If you don't have that proof, you got to get somebody to sign for you. Give two pieces of mail. Go get the new form. The new form is protected by the feds. And every law enforcement officer, myself, and everyone else, we get to use post office boxes. But they got to have a real address on the backside of that screen somewhere on your driver's license. You can have a post office box, but you got to have a hardcore address that only supposedly law enforcement can see. So everybody had to dance that music. Oh, my God.
Oh, and this is completely off topic, but Cobra, is it true that you can get busted for tinted windows and strobe lights?
Yeah. Well, here's the dealio. I got pulled over by Florida Highway Patrol. I was cruising down the road, rush hour traffic. I seen the guy. He was stalking somebody, so I figured, hey, you know, they might do an abrupt move, so I changed lane, properly signal light, the whole nine yards. I'm 4 miles below the speed limit. And I continue on to change over 5 lanes of traffic, and I'm in the fast lane now, and I bumped it up a little bit. Here he comes, pulls me over. He says, you know, you got tinted windows? I said, yes, sir. Purpose of it? I says, I'm hauling prisoners. Oh, I said, well, you know, be like your brother. I wouldn't want to be displaying him. He goes, oh, that's fine. So he's going to write me a ticket for that. Then he goes, what's that big light up there on the top of your truck? And I said, that's a light bar. He goes, turn it on. I thought, I did that before, and y'all wrote me a ticket. So I step out of the truck, all right? I step out of the truck. He turns the damn thing on, then writes me a ticket for it. So, but I had 7 other state troopers witness that, and they said, I don't think he can do that. I says, I called my attorney, and I says, hey, my local attorney, by the way. And he said, no, he can't go in your truck without permission. He violates, so that ticket you don't have to worry about. I said, well, I'm going to court anyway. I want to get this shit straightened out once and for all. But, yeah, it was the highlight of a Thursday. With 7 state troopers and my truck scrubbing its ass off on the side of the road. It looked like we all pulled over somebody. Don't know who they pulled over, but it looked kind of comical. And I'm there on the side of the road for 2 hours. But what terrified me is if my strobe lights were illegal, it's a arrestable offense. It's not a ticket offense. It's a arrestable offense.
Okay.
He wrote me for having blue lights, and I do not have any blue lights, okay? So the ticket's wrong anyway, but nonetheless, that's all bad. But what happened was is I had just went to one of the loan sharks that I had put off a few guns to over this course of this 18 months. And one of the guns, he couldn't sell. It was just, you know, I ain't going to take $200 for a gun. I paid $2,000 for it. So I went and picked that gun up, and I had that gun in the vehicle. No guns on me. So I put my hands out the window when I was pulled over initially. It was kind of like I was almost a damn felony stop. So I put my hands out, and I said, I'm signal zero. He goes, all right, on you? I said, no, sir, behind me. He goes, all right, cool. So as he's talking to me, he says, let me see your CCW license. I said, I don't have one. He goes, you don't? Then here come back up, and then more back up, more back up. And I'm thinking, holy shit, they're going to take me to jail for not having a CCW permit, but I ain't got no guns on me. So I figured it's just a bad day for me. So I asked him, I said, oh, we got the shit in the shooting breeze. I said, what caused you to pull me over? He goes, your tag is hot. I said, really? So my tag has been hotted in the FHP system. For what reason, I don't know. So I intend to find out why I am being profiled and targeted and what the hell's going on. So I'm really hot now. I'm 38 hot. If you've seen all the emails I was sending out, I'm thinking, why are these guys still messing with me? Who is messing with me now? Because we're going to find it out. Because, you know, everybody's calling for the feds to come in, the feds to come in. You know what? It's about time for the feds to come in, find out what the hell is going on. I don't like it, and I don't think it's fair. And I got rights, too. So there you go.
Okay, I just couldn't resist that.
Oh, I couldn't resist to tell you about it. That was the damnedest thing I ever been through. Hell, you know what I told the guy? I said, listen, I've been transporting prisoners all night long. In fact, I've been up for about 70 hours. I'm really tired. Would you mind, I was just going down here to get me a new pair of boots because I wore out my pair of boots kicking on this damn door this morning. I knocked a hole in them. So I'm going down to the 911 store to get a brand new pair of boots. That son of a bitch. God damn it. And their tickets are expensive now. Window tent's $115, my friend.
TJ, where is this case headed?
The hell in a handbasket.
Uh-oh.
TJ's gone, too.
Yeah,
TJ's got tents, too. He's out there with a razor blade scraping them off right now.
<That's all> right. Okay. Denny, I'm going to pick on you.
Yes.
The Haley Cummings case is driving everyone insane. I know that you and I have talked many times off the air about Haley Cummings and Kaylee Anthony, and basically you keep saying, I don't want to hear another word about it. I mean, where is it headed?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, with Haley's case, depending on the day, all along with this thing, I've had my ups and downs. I've had days where I felt very optimistic going back several months initially that she would be found. I thought there was a reasonable chance that she'd be found alive, and I mean, still that hope exists, but with each passing day, I've changed my attitude a little bit on that, and now I'm not anticipating that as a realistic outcome. And I've also thought that, you know, when all these people were jailed on the drug charges, that somebody would make a deal, and part of the deal would be to fess up and tell what really happened that night in that trailer. Now, that hasn't happened that I know of to this point. And my biggest fear in this thing has always been that it will never be resolved, that no one will ever talk, and we'll all know or suspect what we think happened, but it'll never be proved. It'll always remain up in the air. And, you know, I'm in that mood now that we haven't seen any. I was hoping this jail, the drug thing, would lead to a resolution of the Haley situation. That apparently hasn't happened, and now I'm in my, we might never know for sure mode. And that really bothers me. There's got to be closure here at some point, and at least that's what I certainly hope for. Whatever the outcome is, it needs to be established what happened. And I fear now that maybe that's not going to come about. That would be very, I think, the worst possible ending to this is to have no ending.
I have to admit that I read a book today. It's a fairly strange book.
One of mine, I take it.
No. Your books are fine. No, I mean, this was a truly strange book. It was written by someone that sees conspiracies behind every door, literally. you know, JFK, Richard Nixon, the whole atom bomb thing. It goes on and on and on. It's delightful. I enjoyed every page. But, you know, I mean, how much I buy into, I'm not sure. Now, Jan, on the other hand, is a bit of a conspiracy theorist herself. And I won't say argue because we don't. As soon as she starts to argue, I go in the bedroom and fall asleep. But Jen does have some theories about the Sheffields.
Oh, you're going to pull that up on me again, ain't you?
Sheffield?
Yes. Well, I still think I still think that they shouldn't be cut out of this, the possibilities, that's all.
Yep. No cows get cut out of the herd.
I think that they should be just as much as torn to pieces, or not really torn to pieces, but investigated. As the Croslands and the Cummings have been, they're just as involved in this as, I mean, since they are Haley's family too. And just because they weren't there or supposedly been there with Haley the night she disappeared, that doesn't mean that they can't have done something, or perhaps maybe they made a deal with somebody to get her out of there. I mean, I'm not saying for sure, because I don't want to point my finger at nobody.
Yeah, no, I would.
I mean, absolutely.
There was a
nobody.
Time early on I would have agreed with you, Jan, and at this juncture, I mean, after about 2 months on the ground there, you know, I saw them all based on doing all their drug activities and stuff. But now, once everybody focused in on Misty, that would have been too easy. Misty would have said, yeah, Crystal did it, and boom. But no, they, her and Tommy have tied a rope around each other, and they're doing jump skip over into the lake themselves.
Yeah, well, I don't think Crystal had anything to do with it.
Absolutely not.
Honestly, I even doubt if she would even know about it if anybody else did.
Nah.
But I don't, and everybody talks about how Ronald didn't do this, how Ronald didn't do that.
Well, I won't agree there, no.
All that. No, I'm just saying what they all said. But why wasn't Crystal there to help searching?
She was.
It was her daughter.
She was. I mean, what happened is there was some sorry-ass reporting on some folks. But listen, Crystal, give her licks. I mean, that's the mother of the child, and, you know, God knows she must be hurting. The only thing I took out with on it was initially when I got there, I saw them all doing dope. And I said, you know, hey, y'all doing dope, you know, what the hell y'all doing dope for, man? Your kid's gone. And that bothered me. But as far as her helping and doing this and that and the other, she was. They just wasn't giving her, you know, her 5 minutes or whatever.
But, and now, I don't want to defend nobody in particular, but I have to use, say, for Ronald, for instance. Everybody calls him, for Ronald, everybody calls him a dope user. I mean, dope addict. He does this. He does that. He's a terrible father. He should have never had those kids. Well, Crystal's the same way.
Well,
so
I won't argue with you there now. There's a lot of dope. A lot of dope.
Exactly right. I mean, it's on both sides of the family.
Yeah.
So you can't say that it was really Ronald doing it. So why should Crystal have Junior, for instance? She can tell you all, I mean, any time that she's not on drugs anymore, but they did say that when she got custody of him, she did take a test and failed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they turned around and gave
the
baby.
They all on drugs. The whole
damn,
I mean, hell, they got me and my probation tested for drugs. I mean, they want to know if I'm doing drugs. So everybody, I mean, it's just common.
Well, the
common
point is, why pick on one and not the other is what I'm trying to say.
I agree. But the thing of it is Ronald was, you know, as far as you know, are we looking for drug dealers and drugs? Or are we looking for what happened to this kid? And we're looking for this kid, but you guys doing drugs happen to be right in the center of our investigation. Of course, we're going to look at you. And she's kind of outside over in Baker County. She's kind of out of the loop of that thing, and she wasn't nowhere around or anything else. So I understand it both ways. As far as fit parenting, I think somebody said on your TV the other night, if you're going to have a kid, I think you got to go through mandatory parenting first before you're going to have kids and yada, yada, because, you know, they're not thinking too brightly. They love their kids. I wouldn't say they didn't love their children. They do.
Oh, I never denied that.
Sickness, no, but this sickness that they got going on, it gives them poor judgment, I would say. You know, but as far as loving them, I think even Ronald and Misty and all that, I think they all love the kids. It's just they have some very poor judgment, you know.
I've never said that none of them didn't love her.
No,
honestly believe they did.
They still do.
Right. And so, but that's not, like I said, that wasn't my point. Given the situation that they all are just alike, why would they just finger one side and not the other?
Good question.
That was my only gripe.
Probably because
of
the county.
I've never accused them. But I'm just saying it is a possibility. Nobody wants to look at that possibility, though.
Well, I think it's because of the two different counties. You got one county over here where the hot action is, and it's right there, and it's kind of in law enforcement's face, so they're going to have to take a hard look at it. Baker County, you know, they did find a cracked pipe and some crack or whatever in an old pickup truck out there on the farm when they went searching, but nothing ever happened, you know, because they were there looking for something else. But I've seen her do dope, and I know she did dope, and they've now since admitted, yeah, Cobra told the truth, I was on dope, I had a problem, I didn't want to tell anybody. Well, you know, that's fine. Hopefully you got cleared up and you clean her. Yeah, they're all in dope, but had she been in Putnam County going around buying her dope, she would have fell too. She'd have been right there with them all. That's the difference, I think.
Well,
okay, we're getting close to being out of time.
Well,
but,
don't you leave time without telling them what really happened.
Well, I'm just getting that. Hang on. But I feel like, you know, I'm running 60 minutes. I think that's the show. Don't they have a guy at the end, or they used to? Andy Rooney. Yeah. And he'd come on and tell it as it really was. Cobra. Do you want to do Andy Rooney this week?
I'd love to there, Simon. I think it's time that the clock is ticking down, and I think I need to tell everybody exactly what I think about the whole situation. Well, here's the deal, there's been a bloggers going off about this, and I started it. I went back to my attorney when I found out what was going on, and I asked him, as most folks that have been tuning into the show for a while, I was the investigator asked by a pastor to go to this town to see if I could find out what happened to Haley Cummings. And I was working either for God or for Haley Cummings and nobody else, and I would believe nobody's story until I had checked each and every story 100%. In the midst of all this, came across my sites, thanks to people like Mr. Art Harris, a person out on bond on capital sexual child molestation charges, and everybody knows his name. And I had his file, and apparently he continued to go to the Haley Bug Center, and the police were summoned, and nobody seemed to be able to do anything. Thus, Kim Bacazio wrote a letter to Geraldo and said, you know, I was keeping the shit off the streets and doing X, Y, Z. Who's this bounty hunter guy down there? Yada, yada. Well, after many days of meeting with law enforcement, some of the top brass, the ones involved in this case, Jeff Hardy, John Merchant, Travis Smith, and Chris Middleton, and asking these guys if I was going to investigate any of these people. I had like 9 files. I arrested successfully 8 folks in that county, and the 9th one was a little bit more challenging. And, you know, I'm appointed by the insurance company, licensed. I contacted law enforcement the day of. Art Harris was there at my payment plan to, you know, he was filming What Happens to Children in America or something. Everybody said I was trying to make a movie. I wasn't. I didn't really care as long as I could get the little girl's face on the media so that people like us now could sit and talk about it, Nancy Grace, and, of course, Art could get thousands and thousands of hours of blowing smoke up everybody's ass. All this was filmed, every stitch and fiddle of it. And there was 5 witnesses that saw them, and they gave me the file, and, of course, they said they never did. Well, after all the lies and the tapes can't be found and nobody goes and questions anybody and depositions are taken and then I have to pay to have them, you know, translated in English so you can read them because nobody wants the depositions, nothing is going in the favor of them, they had offered me a PTI deal, a pretrial intervention. Basically, if I would take this deal.
Hey, I have to interrupt you. This is incoming. It's really hot.
Okay.
You forgot to say Art Harris at artharris.com.
Oh, Art Harrison, ArtHarrison.com. Yeah, the pink lipstick, Chanel number 5, you know him, that guy. He held back these tapes, said that he lost them, said that if he released them, I'd go to prison for sure. But bottom line is this, and I don't really give a hoo-dee-bop about all that now. I was offered a PTI deal, post-trial, pre-trial intervention, where I would plead guilty to a felony. And I wouldn't do any jail time. After about 16 or 18 months, I would go along happily on my way. Would be no problem. The problem is, if I pled to a felony, I would never have my license as a PI or a bondsman or anything else. You'd never get that as a felon. You're a convicted felon for the rest of your life, even though it goes away or whatever happens, I don't know. But I could not take that deal because it would cost me my license. So it drug on for about a year, and about a year and a few days or a year or something, they come back with another deal. Hey, we're going to give you a misdemeanor. All right? What kind of misdemeanor? Simple touch strike battery. It's simple. I touch you on the arm and you didn't approve of that, I could be arrested and charged for simple touch strike battery, which is a misdemeanor. I said, super fine. Then they sent me out the paperwork, and the probation was very restrictive. I couldn't do a damn thing. I had to report in. I had to do this, that, the other. I couldn't carry a gun. None of this crap. I said, no, no, no. I'd rather just go ahead with the program and go to trial. So they tailor-made my probation so that I could get my license back, so that I could continue to be an investigator. However, I could not do any investigations or bail bond work in the 7th Judicial System, nor could I ever mess around with Snodgrass, first party, second party, or even talk to Jesus about him, leave him alone. So I was
in other words, you couldn't invite him to your birthday party.
He can't come to my birthday party, I can't go to his, you know, that kind of thing. So.
I'll tell you what, I just need to quickly run out to the phone lines. Someone coming in from 218, what's your name and what's your question and comment, or comment for us?
My name is Kim. I'm calling. I just have a statement I think I would like to say that when it comes to, like, who's a better parent, Ron or Crystal, I personally feel that the state of Minnesota, or the state of Florida, and the social services let that child down. You know, she should have been, both of those children should have been in foster care, you know, from the custody battle, simply because of Ron's past history, you know, his track record. And, you know, Crystal couldn't even find her court papers, didn't know where they were sent to, and that would have been my main priorities, where's my stuff? You know, I just feel that those children should have been placed in foster care until their well-being was completely investigated.
I want Jen to feel this one, because it's, you know, what you're saying is actually what I feel. You know, the whole system let those children down.
Well, they did.
Exactly.
They did, definitely did. I mean, the children should have been placed in a home where they, a different environment, and a safe.
Even for a while.
Right, until this was all cleared up, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Or until one of the parents that would have custody could prove that they were cleaning themselves up or clean themselves.
Right. You know, my son just got custody of his two boys, and he had to go through a whole bunch of, you know, they don't like to take the children away from the mother, but, you know, when the father is a better choice, you know, they will. And I'll tell you, he fought tooth and nail, but he's doing really good, and he's got two little boys, and, you know.
Yeah, well,
I just feel that those children were definitely failed by the state of Florida. And I'm not dissing the state of Florida because I was born in the state of Florida.
No, but, I mean, if you look at the Haley Cummings case, his child, and it was literally a choice of two evils. I mean...
Yeah, yeah.
And
exactly.
Both were evil.
I agree.
They needed to be, you know, investigated, especially with, you know, with those bruisings, you know, on Haley, which was, you know, apparently through the school. But there were a lot of red flags, though. Those children should have been in protective custody for at least a little while, a foster home or of some sort, just to get them, you know.
I honestly
believe this could have been prevented.
Yeah. Thank you for your call.
Thank you, Simon.
Really
Thanks,
need
Dan.
To wrap this program up. I'm just about out of time. I need to go round the table. and get everyone's final comments. Denny.
Yes, I guess I'll just close what I said earlier. I'm in a down mode regarding Haley Cummings. My fear now is that we're never going to have an end to this. That's, like I say, my biggest concern. It needs to be wrapped up one way or the other, and I'm afraid that's not going to happen.
Okay. When we do solve this case, you owe Jan and I dinner.
Okay, fair enough.
All right. Good deal. Hey, honey, I just scored us dinner.
Yeah, we got to solve this case now.
Okay. Dave, your final thoughts for today.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's been a pretty good show. Excuse me. It's been a good show. Okay. Like Haley and Kaylee, it's like they're fighting for. I don't mean them. I mean the cases. They're fighting for the most stupid case in history. You know that. Every time you turn around, there's something weirder about each one, and that's what keeps us, you know, working, I guess. But it's too bad.
Oh, it certainly
is. At the expense of these children.
Yeah. And my good friend Cobra. Okay.
Well.
No, yeah, he's there.
Cobra.
I'm here.
How do you feel about shoving a large blunt object up the rectum of a particular reporter?
Well, if I was into bestiality and sexuality, I probably would, but I didn't know if I was Cobra or Mickey Rooney, because I never heard Mickey Rooney get cut off right in the middle of his speech. I'm like, holy shit, man. What I was trying to tell you is I don't have any faith in any of this happening, because I ran from a felony into a misdemeanor, which I'd never heard anybody losing their right to have a gun on a misdemeanor charge, except if that misdemeanor charge is a crime of violence. And now I tend to lose all my licenses, so I'm crying out saying, hey, somebody tricked somebody around here, and I ain't liking it too damn much. And I'm hoping that they can straighten it out, because who would ever thunk it that this would happen like this? And that's what I've been commenting about, and I'll keep it kind of clean. But as far as the case goes, I got all the faith in the world in Jeff Hardy. I've always said that from day one. He's about the only damn one that I have plenty of faith in. The rest of them change around. I understand some of them have moved on here and there, and kind of like those investigators for your other case where the missing kid and ain't nobody talking about it, nobody wants to walk around and talk about it. Is, I don't know, but I'll tell you this, I know that there's still a light burning up there in Putnam County to try to shine into the darkness and see what did happen and who did do what, and I do believe that you're going to end up getting a free dinner from Benny. I do believe that, and I've always believed that, and it's just a matter of time. I mean, they're coming, if they can keep certain folks out the middle of the damn thing, they should have got a restraining order on Art Harris. I mean, they should have got something after his ass, because he's the one that really flipped script and did all kinds of shit, in my opinion. I mean, he has screwed the damn thing up more than anything else, reporting half-truths, bending the things around. And I wish Peter was on the line, because we voice-therapied him for a long time, and he just twists shit left and right and holding back stories and evidence that would help things to get better ratings. I mean, is he ever going to come forward and said, hey, you know, here's the truth, you know, that he knew all along. But I lost a lot of faith in some of the journalists that have been covering this story. There's a few good ones, TJ. I mean, you guys are long distance, but you've been pretty accurate. Dave, he's doing a good job. But some of them just ain't worth a hoot of beans, buddy.
Well, I'll tell you what. Mr. Harris and Cold Streets or whatever it's called, I think they're coming under the microscope this coming week.
I hope so.
One case ends, another starts.
That's right.
Jan, your final thoughts.
Well, I do have one thing to say, that I hope that just because they
have it once they sentence Ronald and Misty, and they have all of this bunch in jail, that they don't let this case go into the cold case file, thinking that they do have the guilty party behind bars, and just settle it for that, because that wouldn't be right until they know.
You don't know Jeff Hardy, honey. You don't know Jeff Hardy. That ain't gonna happen. That's not
well,
gonna
sure
happen. That's why I say
not.
Penny's gonna buy y'all supper, and I hope you like a big steak, medium rare. You know.
I'm gonna order the biggest thing on the menu.
Damn right. Damn right.
Okay, I have to wrap this up. I want to thank everyone for taking part, and I want to thank our listeners for listening in. And there's a good chance we'll be doing this again next week. And until then, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
All right, thank you very much.
I'll see you later from Cobra Man.
Thank y'all for being here with us.
Later,
yeah,
Gators.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Later. Bye.
Bye.